Good afternoon, everyone. This is Anand Bansal, and along with my colleague Vivek Agarwal, we are co-hosting this call. We'll begin in a short while as people are coming to the call. Good afternoon, everyone. We'll begin in a short while. Vivek, kindly go ahead and start the proceeding.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Info Edge India Q3 Results Conference Call. As a reminder, all participants' line will be in listen-only mode, and there'll be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need any assistance during the conference call, please raise your hand on your screen. Please note that this conference is being recorded. Joining us today from the management side, we have Mr. Sanjeev Bikhchandani, founder and vice chairman, Mr. Hitesh Oberoi, co-promoter and managing director, and Chintan Thakkar, chief financial officer. Before we begin today, I would like to remind you that some of the statements made in today's call may be forward-looking in nature and may involve risk and uncertainties. Kindly refer to slide number 2 of investor presentation for detailed disclaimer. Now, I would like to hand over the conference to Mr. Hitesh Oberoi for his opening remarks. Thanks, and over to you, Hitesh.
Thank you, Vivek. Good evening and welcome everyone to our third quarter FY 2021 results conference call. As always, we will start with the overall financials and then cover each business in more detail. And then, of course, we'll have time for Q&A. The audited financial statements, file and other schedules on segmental billing, revenues, etc., along with data sheet, have been uploaded on our website, www.infoedge.in. So let's discuss the standalone financials first. Billings in Q3 were rupees 297 crores, down 1% year-on-year. Revenue in Q3 was rupees 272.3 crores, down 15% year-on-year. Operating expenses, excluding depreciation for the quarter, were 204.1 crore, down 4.9% year-on-year. And operating EBITDA stood at 68.2 crores versus 105.9 crores last year, a drop of 35.6% year-on-year. And operating EBITDA for the quarter, and operating EBITDA margins for the quarter stood at 25% compared to 33% in Q3 of 19-20. On the other hand, cash EBITDA for the quarter stood at 92.6 crores. It was up 8.9% year-on-year. And deferred sales revenue stood at 393.5 crores as of 31st of December 2020 versus 457 crores as of 31st of December 2019, a decline of 13.9% year-on-year. The cash balance in IEIL and all of its subsidiaries stood at rupees 3,500 crores as of 31st December 2020. This was rupees 1,519 crores as of 31st December 2019. We are expecting a revival of activities on all our platforms. I mean, traffic in the recruitment vertical has been actually at an all-time high. We've been seeing, registrations were up 25%, applications are up 20%. You know, usage, sessions, et cetera, everything is up 15-20% at least over last year. IT and ITES have been, the verticals driving the recovery. And now, of course, many other verticals are coming back as well. In 99acres also, traffic has started growing. There seems to be an improvement in demand for at least ready-to-move-in houses. In Q3, we experienced an all-time high customer queries on the platform as well. In Jeevansathi, we continue to invest in brand and user experience. Over time, this investment has given us an edge over our competitors, and this is reflecting in our growing sort of user base. And Shiksha's traffic share vis-a-vis competition is also rising once again. We are committed to investing more in the Shiksha business and in all the other content initiatives we have in education. And besides internal investments, we continue to explore investment and acquisition opportunities in areas of strategic interest to InfoEdge. Moving on to the consolidated financial highlights. At the consolidated level, the net sales for the group stood at rupees 277.64 crores versus rupees 335 crores last year. For the consolidated entity, at the PAT level, there is a gain of rupees 678.15 crores versus a loss of rupees 61.36 crores from in the same quarter last year. And adjusted for exceptional items, PAT stood at a loss of rupees 25.81 crores in the quarter ended December 20 versus a loss of rupees 61.36 crores in the corresponding quarter of last year. Now let's move on to the business-wise discussion. We'll first cover the recruitment business. In Q3 of 2021, recruitment segment billings were rupees 201.4 crores, down by 4.1% year on year, while revenues were 189.5 crores, a degrowth of 17.7% year on year. The operating EBITDA stood at rupees 106.5 crores, down 20.6% from December 19. Margins were at 56.2% versus 58.3% in Q3 of FY20. Cash EBITDA for the recruitment vertical during the quarter stood at rupees 118.29 crores, which is an increase of 4% year on year. In Naukri, in Q3 of 2021, we experienced a good recovery in collections and billings. December, the month of December specifically, saw a growth in collections over December of last year. The recovery is across, increasingly the recovery is across multiple industry segments. Of course, IT and telecom continue to do well. We also saw an increase in online transactions during the quarter. And online transactions are basically, you know, we have a lot of small businesses who buy online. So that's a healthy sign as well. And on the job seeker side, new CV registration stood at around 15,000 per day in Q3 2021, a growth of 25% compared to Q3 of 2020. And average CV modifications per day stood at 440,000, a growth of 6% in Q3 and 11% in December, the month of December in 2020. The recruiter engagement on the platform has also further improved in Q3, with December seeing a peak of activities post-COVID. IT and ITES segments saw maximum growth in terms of job searches and job postings, followed by the pharmaceutical, healthcare, and real estate segments. We also saw a slight recovery in travel and hospitality for the first time this year. We did curtail our marketing spend, and this is despite our actually curtailing our marketing spend for the quarter. At the same time, we continue to maintain a very, very high market share and traffic share in the recruitment search segment. IIMJobs, a company we had acquired last year, reported a billing of 6.61 crores for Q3 of 2021. This is a growth of 35% from Q3 of last year. Moving on to the real estate vertical. In 99acres, billings in Q3 were rupees 52.4 crores, a degrowth of 3.5% year on year, while revenue stood at 44.9 crores, a degrowth of 22.9% from rupees 58.2 crores in Q3 of 1920. Operating loss for the quarter stood at rupees 3.5 crores. Cash profit for 99acres during the quarter stood at rupees 3.6 crores against a cash loss of rupees 2.8 crores last year. In 99acres, in Q3, billings further recovered, reaching 96% of last year's levels. All business verticals within 99acres, new homes, resale, rental, and commercial showed sequential recovery in business compared to Q2. And of course, we saw resale and new homes recover much faster than rentals. We drove efficiency in our spends, which were down 15% year on year in Q3, with lesser spends on both marketing and facilities. There was strong growth in demand on the platform, as seen in the number of inquiries or responses on the platform, which actually reached an all-time high in both new home and resale, and towards the end in commercial as well. And of course, our top of mind share versus our nearest competitor, Magic Bricks, continues to be high. We continue to see a good sort of sequential momentum on listings and traffic and inquiries in 99acres, and are hopeful of this trend continuing in the near future. More clients are likely to come back to advertise on the platform as normalcy returns to the market. We see the share of online medium in the overall spend of advertisers going up during and post this pandemic due to its inherent cost advantage versus print and outdoor media. And we will continue to invest aggressively on improving our core platform experience in all our business verticals to further strengthen our competitive position. Towards the end, for the last few months, we've also seen more competitive activity in this vertical. And it is very likely that our marketing spends in 99acres will increase going forward. Moving on to the Jeevan Sathi business. In Jeevan Sathi, billings in Q3 grew 17% year-on-year to Rs. 26.2 crores. And revenue grew 15.5% year-on-year to Rs. 24.7 crores. Operating EBITDA losses stood at Rs. 27.6 crores in Q3, up from a loss of Rs. 19.1 crore last year. Cash loss for Jeevan Sathi for the quarter stood at Rs. 26.4 crores, up from a cash loss of 18.4 crores last year. In Q3, Jeevan Sathi also saw growth momentum sustained in a seasonally weak quarter. Post-Diwali sales picked up to reach pre-COVID levels of 20% plus. Business doubled down on some of the key differentiating features like online verification, video calling, and video-based online meetups to drive user engagement and improve platform safety. Jeevan Sathi continues to consolidate its position as it gets into a position of strength in the Hindi-speaking markets in North and Central India. Moving on to the Shiksha business. In Shiksha, in Q3, billings grew 27.9% year-on-year to Rs. 16.9 crores, while revenue grew 23.5% year-on-year to Rs. 13.2 crores. EBITDA for the quarter stood at Rs. 0.8 crores versus a loss of Rs. 1.7 crores in Q3 of last year. Cash profit for the quarter stood at Rs. 4.5 crores, up from a profit of Rs. 83 lakhs in Q3 of last year. And we continue to sort of invest aggressively in our content sort of efforts to get more and more users onto our platform. Moving on to the strategic investments. Zomato, like you probably know, received an investment of $448 million during the quarter in two tranches, $253 million in December 2020 and $195 million in November 2020. Key marquee investors like Bailey Gifford, Mirae, Fidelity, Tiger Global participated in these rounds. With these two rounds of funding, our fully diluted shareholding now stands at 19% in Zomato. InfoEdge Ventures announced the signing of its contribution agreement with MacRitchie Investments Private Limited, a wholly owned subsidiary of Temasek Holding Private Limited, for a contribution commitment of Rs. 375 crores. That's all from me, from us today, right now. And thank you. And now we are ready to take any questions that you may have.
Thanks, Suresh. We'll now begin the Q&A session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may raise your hand on the screen. We'll take your name and announce your turn in the question queue.
Yeah, so the first question is from Sachin Hemdani from Perfect Research. Sachin, go ahead and ask your question.
Good evening, sir. I have a few questions, listing them together. Number one, how big is the size of opportunity for Naukri.com in India? How much can the overall market grow from here in the long run? Next, in the previous con calls, you hinted towards working on a platform for the blue collar hiring. Can you please throw some light on any development in this regard? And the last one, what steps are we taking to diversify our dependence of majority of our revenues in Naukri from subscription to our recruitment database system? Thank you.
Okay, now the size of the opportunity, I mean, it's huge. I mean, millions of people are hired in India. We are probably still maybe 25-30% of the overall sort of recruitment market. And I'm referring just to the white collar market. I don't think there are some companies who maybe do half their hiring through Naukri. There are some companies who do maybe 20% of their hiring through Naukri. So we are still in that ballpark. And, the market can be very, very large in the long run because I guess it will, to some extent, of course, depend on how fast India grows. So if you believe that India will be a $5 trillion economy, I don't know, 5 years from now or 7 years from now or whenever, or a $10 trillion economy 10 years from now, 20 years from now. I mean, the truth is that if that has to happen, then the number of companies in India will grow, the number of people they employ will grow, and all these people will have to be hired. So the overall sort of market could grow 2x, 3x, 4x, 5x, I don't know how much over the next 10 or 20 years. But it, of course, it will depend on how fast the Indian economy grows, right? We can only sort of help people find jobs. We can't create jobs. So, but just to give you a sense, I mean, we work with close to 75,000 companies in India. The leading job sites in China work with over 500,000 enterprises, right? So the smaller sort of companies, you know, the general classified portals in China, the ones who deal with the blue collar types, type of companies, they work with sometimes over a, you know, million, 2 million enterprises, right? So that's how big the Chinese economy is. So there's no limit to how big this market can be in the long run. It'll depend on whether India fulfills its potential or not. But in the short run, you know, like I said, we are still maybe a third of all hires or a fourth of all hires happen through Naukri. So if we can improve the user experience on our platform, if we can grow our database, if we can do a better job of matching job seekers to recruiters, we can still up our growth in the number of hires through Naukri. The blue collar job board, you know, we are just sort of test marketing right now. We've launched a product, jobhair.com. It's fully functional. You can test it out, you can try it out. But right now we are focusing only in NCR. So it's live only in Delhi, Noida and Gurgaon. We've been working on perfecting some of the features, perfecting the rollouts, figuring out our digital marketing strategy, figuring out our job acquisition strategy, figuring out our resume acquisition strategy. And we made very good progress. And I think we are reaching a stage where very soon we will try and we'll roll it out to more cities. So I'm confident that by, you know, in the next 6 months, we would have sort of at least entered two or three other cities as well through JobHai. It's very, very early days. Right now, we are just focused on getting the product market fit right, getting jobs, getting users. We are not even looking to monetize right now. This is a 5 to 10 year game. It's not likely to move the needle in our business over the next 12 to 18 months, but it's a good sort of, it's a good space to be in for the long run. And we're getting in early. We already have maybe the highest number of jobs in Delhi as far as the blue collar job board is concerned on JobHai. Your third question regarding, I don't think I fully understood that. You said subscription, reducing dependence on subscription and moving more to databases, right?
No, reducing dependence on subscription to database. See, 60% of our revenue comes from database subscription. Is that too concentrated?
Well, you know, we want to grow our database subscription revenue also, and we've been working very hard to grow that piece. But in addition to the database subscription product, that's our bread and butter product. That's almost all companies who sort of are annual customers of Naukri use that product because it's just very, very effective when it comes to hiring. We can do better with our job listings product. For the longest time, it's been less than 15% of our revenue. And there is a team working on improving that product. We just rolled out, in fact, just 2 weeks back, we rolled out a branding product on mobile phones, right? So we are rolling out mobile branding features slowly as we speak. We had desktop branding offerings, but we didn't have anything on the mobile phone, but we are now working on that front as well. So a couple of products are going to go live on that front. We've also been working on a data product. So we've got something called Talent Pulse, which is a data offering to help companies figure out what's happening in the job market, where the talent is, what salaries are like, etc. So this is the first of its kind, which we are launching and early days on that one. In addition to this, we have a small services business, eHire. We also have a small software business, RMS, where we sell recruitment automation products to companies. We also have a campus hiring business called First Naukri. We have IM Jobs, there's a job posting offering. But the database piece continues to be a large part of our story. At some point in time, it was 70%. I don't see it going below 60, 65 ever because this is our bread and butter offering. And a lot of the hiring takes place through this. But of course, we are working very, very hard to grow the other products I mentioned in our portfolio.
Another mute.
Thanks. The next question is from Deep Shah from Ambit Capital. Deep, go ahead and ask your question.
Hi, sorry. This is Vivekanand from Ambit. I have two questions. One is traffic trends in 3Q and perhaps January in the real estate vertical. You mentioned that the competition is now advertising aggressively and we see ads by housing as well. What are your thoughts on the traffic move there and how much would you probably need to raise your advertising investments here to mark to market? Second question is on collaboration with strategic investees in the edtech and real estate space. You have spoken about this in the past. It would be great if you can give an update here.
Right. So, you know, like I mentioned, you know, we are seeing a return of, advertising activity from our competitors. Housing has been very, very aggressive for the last few months on all media. We were quiet for a while because the market was not in very good shape. But now that the market is sort of bouncing back, we are likely to get aggressive once again. Now, how much will we have to spend on advertising? Frankly, will be a function of how much our competition enters spending on advertising. We are very, very rational players. You know, we are conservative. But if competition is aggressive, we will be forced to respond. And you will see our ad spend go up this quarter in 99acres. By how much? It's hard to say. It will depend on, like I said, what the others do. And, you know, every time you have somebody advertising and others are not, you know, you see some share movements. But those are often temporary in nature because once the other player starts responding, you know, you sort of go back to ground zero. So in some sense, it's a bit irrational if everybody's advertising because the market can only grow at a certain rate. It's impossible to make the market grow much, much faster. But then that's how it is. The other question regarding strategic investment. See, we've been investing in the four spaces we operate in inside Info Edge, jobs, real estate, matrimony, education. We've for a while had this strategy to invest in adjacent sort of areas outside the company, right? So we made a few investments in education. We have invested in a company called No Paper Firms. We've invested in a company called Univer IT. We've invested in Coding Ninja. We've invested in an HR services company. We've invested in Teal, which is a real estate sort of software company. We've just announced another investment in real estate in a startup. They're doing a B2B sort of play in the broker tools sort of category. So we acquired IIM Jobs last year, as well. So this is an important part of our strategy. There's a lot of opportunity in every vertical. We know that we can't do everything in-house. We've been upping our investment in innovation. We've been upping our investment in product development. Across our four verticals, we have close to 700 people working in product development roles. But there are opportunities everywhere. And so every time we see a company which looks interesting but we don't want to do it in-house at that point in time. But at the same time, we want to sort of be in that market. We don't want to sort of lose that market. If we find a good startup, we invest. That's how we are playing this right now. Hopefully over time, we'll find some synergies between our sort of properties and the companies we're invested in. For example, we are trying out something with Teal, a real estate sort of analytics company we invested in to see if we can, get offer an additional service on 99acres to our users using their sort of data and their algorithms and their search. We've tried something with one or two education companies as well in the past. So we'll sort of, but the long-term sort of ambition here is to sort of be in multiple adjacent sort of spaces as well. Now, if you look at Naukri, there's a bunch of stuff we're doing in-house, like we're doing the blue collar job portal in-house, we're doing RMS in-house, we've done first Naukri in-house. But there could be other opportunities outside. And if we don't think we can do them in-house or we don't have the resources or we want to focus on something else, we would rather invest in them. And then maybe 3 or 4 years later, we'll see what to do with them. So that's the strategy, strategic investment strategy. If there are, if there's something we can sort of take in and scale up, we would rather acquire, right? So there's something which, we believe we can add a lot of value to immediately. And we can, if we take them in, then we would rather acquire. Like, for example, IIM Jobs. So despite the slowdown in the hiring market, because we acquired IIM Jobs and we sort of threw the might of our sales team behind it, we were able to grow our revenue from IIM Jobs or billings from IIM Jobs 35% last quarter, right? So if we see something which is a direct fit, which is more in the area in which we already operate and which we can scale up tremendously, then we would rather acquire. if adjacent areas, we would rather invest, watch how these companies do over a 3-4-5 year period, and then see what next after that.
Sure. Thanks, Hitesh, for the explanation. Just one small follow-up, since you mentioned about IIM jobs. Is the growth in billing there a reflection of the verticalization of recruitment, or is it that you were able to extract synergies because of your sales processes being far superior? And can you give some more color on how this came through? Did IIM jobs reach more number of customers who currently use Naukri?
So it's primarily that. See, of course, there is some, the product is very solid, it's rock solid, it's very, it's a good brand. Not only do they have IIM jobs, they have another product which is sort of getting good traction called Hirist, which is a tech hiring platform, which they've been working on for a while. But what we were able to do, see, was to sort of basically take them to many more customers over the last 9 months. We merged the two sales teams. We merged the IIM jobs sales team with the Naukri sales team. IIM jobs was working with maybe a few hundred customers because they had limited reach, because they had only a handful of people in sales. But we had, like I said, we work with 75,000 companies, maybe a few thousand of them can use IIM jobs. So that's what, and that's something we do really well. You know, we have a solid engine, sales engine. And through this engine, we took IIM jobs and Hirist. Hirist is still sort of a tiny brand, but it's getting there, to a lot of our customers. And because the product is rock solid, when they started using it, they liked it. And, you know, and we hope to continue to do more of this in the coming quarters as well.
Okay, thank you. All the best.
The next question is from Anmol Garg, Motilal Oswal. Anmol, go ahead and ask your question.
Hey, hi, good evening. So just had few questions. First of all, can you give any update on the cash that we have raised through QIP?
Chintan, you want to take that?
Sorry, say again?
Cash raised through QIP, an update on that.
What's happened to it?
No, there is nothing much has happened in terms of the utilization of that fund. I mean, we already had cash of roughly around 1500 crores, you know, when we raise this money, right? So we continuing, and if you see that, you know even in Q1, in the top, you know, in the midst of, you know, COVID, you know, the peak of COVID, we were cash generating. Q2 also we generated cash, and in Q3, in fact, we generated on YoY basis cash, which is more than what it was in previous year. So we are cash generating, and that is despite of the incremental investment that we are doing in branding and marketing in matrimonial business. So we have cash surplus, and we have not done anything very specifically from the QIP fund so far.
Anything in the pipeline that we have that we can acquire from the cash that we have raised?
Well, I mean, that's part of our strategy that we will, you know, will continue to invest, you know, through our P&L. And P&L, as I said, that we are generating cash, as well as it can happen through our balance sheet. Some of the small strategic investment that Hitesh just kind of talked about, you know, to a previous, in a previous question. I think some of those investment will continue to happen from this. But if something, you know, large acquisition has to happen, we can use this cash. But there's nothing so far that, you know, we have anything to announce here.
Okay, sure. And secondly, my second question is towards 99acres and towards the strategy that we are adopting from the same. So in general, where do we expect our marketing dollars to be? Will it be towards having more brokers on the website or towards the house owners? And still the listings are down by sort of 20%. When do you think that we can be at the previous year levels?
Yeah. So, you know, so we target both dealers and owners. You know, it's actually free for owners. If owners can list for free, dealers, of course, have to pay to list, and they buy subscription products. And so our goal is to get all sort of genuine supply onto the platform, irrespective of which source it comes from. So it could come from a dealer, it could come from an owner, it doesn't matter to us. But we want all the listings in one place. So because that's what gets us our traffic. Now, our marketing campaigns will target everybody. Again, you know, anybody who wants to list a property is, you know, we'll encourage them to list to that on 99acres and make it easy for them. Listings are not back as yet because, see, the broking business has, the brokers are taking some time. One, of course, we are, you know, we've been toying around with the business model as such. what was happening earlier was that, you know, we were getting a lot of repeat listings because, you know, brokers to get more inquiries used to post the listing, same listing a few times. And now in some of our markets, we have moved to a different model. We are encouraging our clients to move to a different model where we are saying, listen, why don't you boost your listing instead of posting it again? You know, so if you, you know, so hopefully, you know, it will result in less spam. So that one that, you know, we, there's a shift in model there. We are trying out some new things in a few markets. And as a result of which brokers are boosting their listings. So they're consuming the same number of credits, but they are posting fewer listings. The other is, of course, brokers have been slow to get back onto the platform after COVID. What we've seen is actually a surge in supply from owners. We've seen more owner listings on the platform. Owner listings are, in fact, up 20-30% over last year. On the other hand, broker listings are down 20-30%. But slowly, brokers are also getting back. So now the market is actually a lot more open than it was, you know, 6 months ago or 3 months ago. But we are confident that all these brokers will also come back. But yes, because of the change in model, you may still see fewer broker listings than earlier.
Sure, Hitesh, thanks. This is very useful.
Next question is from Sanjay Bhagava. He is from Bharosa Club, co-founder. Sanjay, go ahead and ask your question. Sanjay, you are there?
Sanjay is on mute.
He's unmuted. Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, Sanjay, go ahead.
Okay, so I'm a very small investor in Naukri. I just invested and I just hold 750 shares. But one of the things I was intrigued about was I used to be on the founding team of PayPal, and PayPal looked at both sides, the consumers and the merchants. So I don't understand Naukri's business that well, but there seems to be a lot of focus on the merchants or the businesses. So is there also a focus or a plan focus on individuals and then being able to give them a whole suite of products which they can use? Because that may be a pretty good growth strategy for Naukri. So I just wanted your comments on that. Is there any thinking on that side?
Sanjay, when you say individuals, you mean job seekers?
So I mean everybody, you know, because I think Naukri serves individuals for many things, matrimonial, real estate, job seekers, you know, so it serves a bunch of people and touches them in different ways, right? So, and also in the budget, you have now people saying that we are going to go into the gig economy, and the gig economy people are going to get pensions and so on and so forth. There may be PF. Maybe at some stage there'll be a universal pension. You know, so even I'm an employer in some ways because I employ domestic staff. I may have to pay them a pension. Yeah, maybe a long way off, but that's the what I was.
Yeah, so you know, the way we sort of are organized and the way we run the various, so we have different portals. You know, so we don't have one common platform for jobs and real estate and matrimony. We don't have all of them on one sort of platform. We have different URLs, different platforms for these four verticals. The Naukri business is focused on recruitment, white collar recruitment. The 99acres business is for real estate listings. For matrimony listings, we have Jeevan Sathi, and for education sort of content and classifieds, we have Shiksha.com. And they sort of don't talk to each other. These businesses work independently. They have separate teams, separate targets, separate goals. Everything is like different. That's how we operate right now. You know, and to answer your question in all our verticals, we have actually the way we are organized, like in Naukri also, we have one team working on the recruiter side, right? Which is because we are a marketplace, like you said, two-sided marketplace. We have a bunch of people working on building products for recruiters. And at the same time, we have a bunch of people working on building and improving products and improving the user experience for job seekers. Ditto in 99acres, ditto in sort of matrimony and Shiksha as well. Of course, you know, what we offer on the platform, the kind of products we offer, the kind of services we offer are, you know, guided by our sense of what we think, you know, makes sense and what we think is relevant at this stage. Like I mentioned earlier, and we are also, while we are trying to do more and more stuff inside the company, we just launched a job board for blue collar workers. We launched a an AI-based tech platform for tech hiring. We acquired IIM Jobs, so premium job seekers. We are working on a recruitment software product. At the same time, we're also investing in adjacent areas outside the company, right? So that at some point in time in the near future, over a 4 or 5 year period, we can maybe look at offering more, even more services to our audience. So that's the strategy we are following right now. Maybe it's a little different from eBay, because I guess eBay was one platform and you had all kinds of buyers and all kinds of sellers on one platform. Our approach is a little different. It's more vertical rather than horizontal.
Yeah, may I add something there? See, Sanjay, if I heard your question correctly, look, we have got some candidate services, but 98% of our job seekers who come to Naukri, they don't pay anything. You're allowed to put your resume up for free, you're allowed to apply for a job free, everything is free. Do we see a big thrust in candidate services where it becomes a big part of our business? We have no products in the pipeline which will suddenly lift candidate services to where anywhere near the revenue that we get from employers is, to answer that question.
Yeah, that's fine. You know, I wasn't suggesting that you charge candidates, but I'm saying that if you have many more consumers or individuals and whoever pays, you know, so you just like telecom firms measure an ARPU, an average revenue per user. You know, it doesn't matter who pays, whether it's a consumer or a business. It may be something interesting to look at, but I'm not sure.
Sanjay, you're right. See, we have products like Sanjeev said for job seekers, and it's only maybe 1 or 2% of the job seekers who pay for those products. But in absolute numbers, they're actually higher than the number of recruiters who pay. It's just that the ARPU is much lower. Ticket size is much lower.
Yeah, please carry on.
You're through, Sanjay?
Yeah, I'm through.
Thank you so much. The next question is from Rishit Parikh, Nomura. So Rishit, go ahead and ask your question.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for giving me the opportunity. Just two questions from my side, right? First, on the blue collar market, could you provide just a little more color on what could be the opportunity size? What is the initial due diligence that you would have done that, you know, how big can the potential market be, let's say over the next 5 to 10 year perspective, right? And can it be bigger than where we are from, let's say, the enterprise jobs perspective? That's the first. And second, just from the investee companies or Jeevansathi including, right? What is the next, let's say, 3 to 5 year potential value add that you see? Is it going to be EdTech? Is it going to be Jeevansathi, which could potentially drive more value from where we are today? Thank you.
See, the blue collar market, it's very hard to say how big that market will be 5 or 10 years from now. Clearly, in terms of volume, it's a much bigger sort of segment than, you know, the white collar market. If there are 50 million or 100 million white collar workers, the number of blue collar workers are maybe 4 or 5x or 10x of that number, right? So in terms of volume, it's a very large market, but it's unclear how monetizable it is. It's unclear what ARPUs will be like. It's unclear what the unit economics of that sort of space will be. And which is why we're taking baby steps, you know, which is why we have sort of just test marketing in Delhi to see what kind of response we get. Once we sort of figure out the lay of the land, and in the short term, we're not even looking at monetizing aggressively, because we just want to ensure that we build the right product and we get traction and we get users and we are able to get people hired through our system. Once we're sort of we cross that sort of, you know, hurdle, then we'll think about monetizing. But yes, of course, if you look at China, if you look at other countries, these markets are very large, right? They're, you know, the number one, for example, 58.com, which is the general classifieds portal in China, you know, they do a lot more revenue than the number one job site in China, right? So, and most of the revenue is from real estate and jobs. That's 80-90% of the revenue. But in India, unfortunately, that's not how it has played out till now, right? And up till now, nobody's been able to monetize the blue collar sort of workers or recruiters who hire blue collar workers. So some of these things, you know, are all the categories they develop when the economy reaches a certain size, and which is why, in my view, it's going to be very hard to monetize for the next year or two. But once the the space becomes a little more organized once you see many of these people entering into formal employment, once you see millions of small enterprises, you know, finding it difficult, if they find it difficult to hire workers, if they start using portals, then who knows? So hard to say. I mean, volume-wise, it's much, much bigger. ARPU is very, very low. And in fact, unit economics, question mark right now.
Okay, fair enough. And then just on the next value driver, potentially, what are your thoughts on that?
Sorry, could you repeat that question?
Just from a 3 to 5 year perspective, right? What could be the potential value driver? Is it likely to be Jeevansathi, EdTech, or where do you think your bets will be?
See, one, we continue to see a lot of opportunity to grow in Naukri, right? You know, of course, it's going to be a function of how fast the economy grows also, but we are trying to add more and more sort of verticals. You know, like I mentioned, we have a campus hiring play. We're trying to do something in recruitment automation. We are trying to see how we can use more machine learning to improve the Naukri platform experience. We are trying to see what we can do on the data products side. So we believe that the recruitment opportunity is itself very large, and we still have a long way to go on that front, number one. We see a huge opportunity in real estate in the medium term. See, real estate was in terrible shape for a long time because of various reasons, starting with, you know, demonetization, RERA, the NBFC crisis, a bunch of things happened. Plus real estate, you know, was anyway sort of very highly priced and so on. I think we are now again getting to a point where real estate is becoming an attractive sort of proposition. You know, prices have corrected, interest rates are low, rental yields are going up, unless something, every time I say this, something or the other happens, but real estate, so I don't want to sort of make any forecasts here. But if the real estate market picks up for the next 5-10 years, and real estate is deeply cyclical, and we've been through a very long cycle. So if the market picks up, then it could sort of be a sort of big opportunity for us. Of course, we'll have to execute really well because I mentioned the call earlier, the market is competitive. We are a leader, but we are not a dominant player like we are in Naukri. So if we play our cards right, then we may be able to sort of unlock some value in that category. Matrimony is harder, you know, because again, it's a three-player market, it's hotly contested, but here we are not a leader, we are number three. We are, of course, cash rich, and we continue to invest aggressively, and we continue to gain share. But here, unless and until, you know, there is some sort of action in consolidation or something of that sort, it'll be hard for any player in this space to sort of break away and create a lot of value. Education is, you know, we've been surprised by what we saw in education this year. Our education business has sort of done well, despite colleges being shut, despite schools being shut. So we're going to start looking at it, we've also trying out a bunch of new things in education. We've sort of focused more on study abroad, for example, over the last few months, beginning to give us good results. It's always been the fourth business inside InfoEdge, but it's showing some signs of attraction. So we're going to dive deeper and see what else we can do out there. Medium term.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Next question is from Manik Jagtiani. Manik, go ahead and ask your question.
Hi, this is Lata Jagtiani. I'm his wife. Can you see me at all or what?
We can hear you. Yeah.
Okay. You just need to hear me, right? Okay. I'm a small shareholder of your company. And I also happen to know Sanjeev earlier when I wrote a book, and he did ask for a copy of mine, which I mailed to him. But that's a part. I'm very happy.
I received that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. That's years back. It's very gratifying to see the kind of work you're doing as far as employment is concerned. It's one of the major concerns in this country. But I was really concerned about the kind of multiplier you had on Zomato in the month of December. And then subsequently, there's been a lot of talk about your IPO coming up. So I just wanted to find out how far ahead this is, and is it something that we can expect sometime in September? If you could answer that, thanks a lot.
Yeah, Chintan, you want to take that question?
Yeah. So Zomato IPO, as you know, that Zomato is an independent company with an independent board, And you know, they are, we have already kind of, it's public that, you know, they do intend to do IPO and they are preparing for it. Right now, there is nothing more than that. I mean, they are under preparation. And when the Zomato board will take a final call, you know, I think then only the IPO will proceed. So far, that has not happened.
Okay, so it's not even in the pipeline as of now?
No, they are definitely preparing for it.
Okay. Right?
But I can't really give you any indication as to the timing or any other details of that because the board has not yet taken a call on.
Okay, because there was some kind of buzz about September, so I was just asking. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from Utkarsh Solapurwala from Damas Capital. Utkarsh, go ahead and ask your question. Utkarsh, you are there? So maybe I'll take the next question while he comes to the call. The next question is from Vishal from Inam AMC. Vishal, go ahead and ask your question. Vishal, are you there?
Vishal, you're on mute.
Maybe I need to take next question. Okay. The next question is from Krishna Apala from Capital Mind. Krishna, go ahead and ask your question.
Hi, sir. Am I audible?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks, everyone, for the opportunity. I just have three questions. First one is on 99 acres. So, sir, we have recently became profitable at the operating level. So how long before we see profitable at the PAT level for 99 acres? That is one thing. The second one is on Shiksha. So post-COVID, we have seen increase in online classes in the entire edtech evolution. So are we looking to expand Shiksha universe or product offerings in this edtech space? On the third one, so we have an exceptional item of 703 crores on consolidated level. So can you please elaborate on that? What was it about? So these three questions from my side, sir.
Yeah, I'll take the first two. Maybe Chintan, you can take the third. See, the 99 acres, when will it become profitable at the PAT level, etc.? Very hard for me to say. It will depend on two things. One, how fast are we able to grow top line, you know, once the market recovers, right? So, you know, if the real estate market starts to do well and we are able to grow at 25, 30, 40% per annum, then of course, it's only a matter of time before it becomes profitable. The other, of course, thing it will depend on is what the competitive intensity is like. So if competition is, starts spending a lot of money, if they start discounting aggressively, if they start, advertising like crazy, then we'll be forced to respond. So, very hard for me to say how this will play out in the short term, right? Our endeavor, of course, we would like to be rational as possible, but you know, the number one thing we have to defend is our traffic share and our market share. So we would not, no matter what, we can't afford to let go of that. In Shiksha, you said EdTech is becoming a big part of the story. You're absolutely right. There are now lots of players in EdTech, lots of courses on offer. And Shiksha was primarily targeted at, university and college, as in physical sort of colleges and courses. We've been working on developing an offering to sort of help people figure out what, options in EdTech are out there. That offering was built under the Naukri Learning sort of brand, and we've made some progress in that area. And the idea, why it was built under the Naukri Learning sort of brand at that time was because, in the beginning, some of these courses were mostly for working professionals. Well, Shiksha targets students. So Shiksha is more targeted at students in class 11 and 12 and students in college for, who want to do an MS. While the Naukri Learning offering more targets working professionals who may want to upskill themselves, right? So that's something we've started working on. It's you can go to Naukri and check it out. It's you can search for Naukri Learning on Google and it'll take you there. But still early, it's early days for that offering. We're just getting started.
because we are cash rich on the company level, and Shiksha, I think we can expand the universe, of course, keeping our financials and the profitability in mind. Anything you're looking at the inorganic space, sir, from the edtech offering?
So we made a few investments in some education companies. We've invested in a company called No Paper Forms. They're basically an education software provider to universities and colleges. We've invested in a company called UniVariety. They sort of sell software to education. They have education offerings which target school students and schools. And we've also invested in a company called Coding Ninja, which is basically an edtech player. They teach people, think of them as an NIT online. So these are three investments we made in the last couple of years. And so let's see how these play out over time. But you're absolutely right, there's a lot of opportunity in edtech. In fact, edtech is the one category which has benefited because of the pandemic, right? And it's very also very competitive, and there are large funded players in edtech. So we have to be careful about how we play it.
Right, sir. Just last question on the one-time exception.
Yeah. So there's this one in a large entry as an exceptional item on console. So if you follow Ind AS, at the time when you are consolidating financials with your associate companies, and if the associated companies have kind of raised money and your stake is diluted, what you really do is that, on the one hand, there is a loss of stake that you have, and on the other hand, if the dilution happens at a premium, then you are gaining in that process, right? So that's the kind of a gain which we are required to be taken into a P&L account, and that's what the exceptional item in the console is, and that's roughly around 700 crore. It's a large entry because Zomato raised about roughly around 400 million during the quarter.
Got it. Thank you so much, sir. That answers my question. Thank you.
Next question is from Pooja Ahuja from Quintus Wealth. Pooja, go ahead and ask your question.
Hello, am I audible?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
I think we lost, Pooja, you're on mute.
Am I audible now?
Yes.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah. So my question was regarding the matrimony business. The leading player is sort of getting aggressive in the northern markets. They've launched new portals. So how are we planning to tackle that? What's your thought process there?
See, the number one player is in the country is actually the number three player in the north. And you're absolutely right. They have become a little more aggressive in recent times, and they've launched a few new portals, but they already have some 250 portals. It's not as if they've had these portals for a very long time. But in this business, it's hard for a number three player in any market to sort of make serious inroads in a short span of time. They will have to invest considerable money if they want to make inroads in the North Indian market, is our sense.
Got it.
We continue to be aggressive in this market. So is Shadi. So both us and Shadi continue to be aggressive in this market. So, what happens in matrimony is that it boils down to what is your share of voice when you're advertising. So if the number one and number two players are very aggressive, even if you become slightly more aggressive, it doesn't really make a difference. You'll have to become very, very aggressive for you to try and get, for you to gain share.
Got it. Thank you.
Next question is from Srinath V from Bellwether. Srinath, go ahead and ask your question.
Hi, Hitesh. Just want to find out some qualitative feedback on traffic growth in our key sites like Naukri and 99, say year on year or versus Jan. Any sort of qualitative feedback you could share, that would be great.
Yeah, so in the Naukri business, we're seeing massive sort of growth in traffic. Registrations are up 25%, were up 25% last quarter. Applications are up 20%, 25%. Number of unique applicants are up 20%. Mods are up. So on the job seeker side, all metrics are growing at a very healthy rate. App downloads are up maybe 30% over last year. So we've seen the surge in traffic on the job seeker side also actually got affected by COVID in the first quarter, when there was a lockdown. We saw for the job seekers also leaving the platform, but they've come back with a bang in the last 2-3 months. That's on the Naukri side. And similarly, on the 99acres side, we are seeing a massive jump. We've seen a massive jump in inquiries, right? So the number of responses on the platform, especially for resale, are going through the roof. In some months, we've seen even 50% growth. In some markets, in some of the smaller cities, we've seen 80%, 90% jump in inquiries in real estate. So on the user side, we are comfortable. In Shiksha also, we've seen massive growth in traffic. We've gained a lot of share, in fact, over our competition in terms of traffic over the last few months. On the Matrimony side also, we've been investing aggressively in marketing. So our user base, our number of active user base has been growing at over 20% year on year.
Thanks, Hitesh. That's nice to hear. Sanjeev, just wanted to understand, as in the quarter post the QIP, you had spoken about, capital allocation in concentric circles within our core portfolios. That's where you would kind of look at M&A activities, and at best, in classified, something like auto would be a complete outside opportunity. So just want to understand,
I think I had said auto would be a second concentric circle. It's not the closer concentric circle.
Yeah. And so just want to find out, how do we stand now? Is deal pipeline an issue, valuations an issue, or are we kind of just going to wait it out and take a year or so?
Conversations take time to fructify and mature, especially when you're talking about larger acquisitions. So I think it's a bit of a conversation and waiting game. We've not dropped the ball on that one. Just want to assure you.
Sure. So that basic strategy is in place, and
that's right. We are committed to that strategy. Let's see where it goes.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
And the next question is from Hari from Hillfort Capital. Hari, go ahead and ask your question.
Hi. Thank you for taking time to answer my question. My understanding is that the pricing package of matrimony players in India, right? They seem to be around 4,000 to 5,000 rupees for 3 months, while the global players the ARPUs are far lower. I think around $10 to $15, if I'm not mistaken. So I was just wondering that does this mean that the matrimony services in India, are they sort of pricing out the average user, and is there sort of a pricing intervention possible to drive conversions from free users to paid users?
4,000 to 5,000 is often the list price, but I'll tell you, at least in the north and west where we operate, we are not a very big player in the south. What the consumer ends up paying is a lot less, because most of these services are heavily discounted. If Jeevan Sathi were to start generating 4,000, 5,000 rupees per transaction, we would be double the size we are today. But in the south, you're right. In the south, because matrimony.com is a leading player, they have maybe 70-80% of that market. They are able to command a price premium. And they're able to charge 4,000, 5,000 rupees per user per ticket. Having said that, let me tell you, the real estate, the matrimony market is very different from the dating market. It's a very high involvement category. The entire family gets involved. It's a very big decision. And people don't mind paying a lot of money if they get the right service, right? So it's and the people who are sort of active in this market are also older, so they can afford to pay. Most of our users are 27, 28, 30 years old. In the dating market, on the other hand, I don't know how it is overseas, but in India at least, the audience is much, much younger. So there, people are not willing to pay that much money on a monthly basis. Also, you have to understand that dating users often stay in the market. They come back again, and so on and so forth. So ARPUs for some reason are lower. But because matrimony is a very high involvement category, entire family gets involved, it's a very big decision. You end up spending 20, 30 lakhs in a wedding. What is 20,000 rupees to pay to get the right partner, right? It's not a big deal if you provide the right service. Why matrimony sites, in fact, can charge much more than what they charge today? It's just that there's too much competition in the market, and therefore they end up discounting.
That's super helpful. Thank you.
The next question is from Deep Shah from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead and ask your question.
Thank you for the follow-up opportunity, Vivek again. So first question is on the billing for shiksha.com. We see that this has increased sharply in the last two quarters and has recovered. I think it's at lifetime high, right? So what is going right for us in this business now, and what are the interventions that we took reacting to COVID? Possibly. Second question is on the gross margins following the trend of several small customers of ours now doing online payments for recruitment, real estate, I'm sure, where the sales effort needed to renew low value transactions might have come down. Does that materially change your gross margin? And lastly, Sanjeev, if you could discuss about the performance of your older investees, excluding Policy Bazaar and Zomato, like Shop Kirana, Ustra, Kyuki, and so on. Thank you.
Right. So, Shiksha. So, listen, so it's not as if we did anything because of COVID. It's just that we continue to invest aggressively in creating the right kind of content for our users. It's mostly a content business. We've upped our investment in content. We're getting more reviews on the platform. The platform has become more stable. It's become as we are sort of trying to see what we can use from Naukri also in terms of content to help people solve problems of students. We've launched some new tools on the platform to help students understand, you know, what they can do with their careers and so on. So it's just that we are more focused on providing the right kind of content on our platform than we were earlier. We had taken our eye off the ball a little bit in Shiksha. We are back to, sort of doing the basic stuff right. We've also started, making small inroads in, study abroad counseling. Of course, it was actually hit by COVID this year because many of the countries were shut for a while, but we expect that business to also do better going forward. So it's basically just, more focus on the customer, more focus on content, more focus on sort of solving the problems that Shiksha is supposed to solve. And that seems to be yielding good returns. For the time being, it could also be that because of the pandemic, and because everything has become more digital, education institutions are more open to this idea of spending more money online. A lot of our customers have upgraded in a big way this year, because maybe they're more comfortable spending money online than they were earlier. So that's on the Shiksha side. Sorry, what was the second question?
The second question was on gross margins, and Hitesh, you made a comment earlier, so I wanted you to elaborate.
Yeah. So it's material in terms of number of customers, but it's not very material in terms of revenue, because some of the low paying customers are the ones who buy products online and buy our services online. It helps us get new customers into our fold, so it's good from a long term perspective because it brings down our business development costs. But it's not material revenue. So it's unlikely to change our margins in the short run.
Right. And Sanjeev, on the investees.
Yeah. Shop Kirana continues to do well. It is, servicing its customers. It bounced back to, it's much higher than pre-COVID levels. It continues to track well, but it'll take time for it to sort of really scale up and be valuable, right? Ustra got a round from IIFL Ventures, and it's back up to 70-80% of pre-COVID levels, but still some distance to go before it gets back to pre-COVID levels. Business, which used to be called Shoe Connect, is doing rather well, and that is showing real promise. And as is Gramophone. But these companies are shaping up quite well, actually. So none of our investors have really been hit by COVID to a point where they had an existential crisis. And now they all bounced back or are bouncing back.
Okay, thank you.
Next question is from Srinath V from Bellwether. Srinath, go ahead and ask your question.
Hi. Just want to understand the real estate sector landscape more from a
long-term perspective. So it has been a market where you have builders, brokers, and platforms like us. So we have been enabling, the customer to the builder or the customer to the broker. And it's been a structure that has kind of survived now the test of time and it's done well. But of late, we are seeing these end-to-end players like, Square Yards coming in, also building a technology platform, also having, heavy call centers and acting as a broker and a kind of building up a tech platform. So I just want to understand, again, 3-5 years out, how do you see this landscape playing out? And do you feel we also at some point of time would we did have all check deals and so on. So would we also need to morph into a person completely carrying the transaction and not just enabling a handshake? Just want a kind of a long-term view on the same. Thank you.
So see, the real estate market is large and complex, and we operate in a lot of verticals within real estate. So we have a resale vertical, we have a new home vertical, we have a commercial vertical, we have a rental vertical. Now, Square Yard is basically a big player it's a big broker, a brokerage in new homes, right? And now they're trying to sort of build a tech platform, etc. And I don't know if they're still clients, but they were a client at one point in time. But see, the truth, it'll depend on what shape or form the market takes. If the market starts getting concentrated around a few brokers, then our model will get challenged. So if, there are five players like Square Yard and between them, they have 70% of the market, then it's an issue. But today, for example, we work with, a few thousand developers. We work with, a few hundred channel partners. We work with 25,000 resale brokers. We work with owners also directly. So if the real estate market goes in a direction where there are more and more sort of dealers in the market, there are more and more developers trying to do their own thing online, there are more and more channel partners, then it's good for us because we are a marketplace. Now, on the other hand, if the market starts to consolidate around a few dealers, right, or around a few channel partners or around a few developers, then that's not good news for us. That's, broadly the way we see it. Most parts of the world, consolidation in real estate is very, very hard. I mean, in resale, it is almost impossible because a mom and pop shop business, there is no, today there is not even one real estate sort of chain, a brokerage chain for resale in this country, right? Not even in a city, forget about a national chain. New homes is easier. It's easier, but even that, beyond a point, it's very, very hard for somebody to get, more than a 2-5% share of the market. You see more different channel partners active in different parts of the country. You see there are nuances. It's hard to figure out if you're not close to that market, which projects are going to sell, which projects are not going to sell. But at the same, can real estate tech brokerages sort of exist online? Of course they can. I mean, there's Redfin in the US. There's a Zillow, but there's also Redfin, right? So, but marketplaces exist everywhere. So that's a tried and tested model. How big marketplaces will become in India will ultimately become a function of how big the real estate market actually becomes. Because if there is a lot of home ownership, then what you see is a lot of activity in terms of buying and selling of, old homes as well. And for a real estate platform of the type we are to do really well, we want a resale market to develop in this country. That's not, new homes is not enough. New homes is where we'll get our revenue for the first, the next 5-7 years. But in the long run, what builds a network effect is a resale platform. Where we already have an advantage, we are the largest, we have a big lead, but we want that piece to become larger and larger over time. But there is no reason why different models cannot coexist in the market over time. Will we become a broker at any point in time? Unlikely in the near future, but if the market, like I said, moves in that direction, then we'll be forced to revisit our strategy.
Yeah, look, may I add? See, 99acres is morphing into a share of transaction model and therefore facilitating, enabling and handholding each transaction is a bit like asking that should Naukri morph into a headhunting firm, right? You can't be a marketplace and then one headhunting firm. There are about 8,000 recruitment firms that are clients of Naukri. There are, I don't know how many thousands, tens of thousands of brokers who are clients of 99acres. So it's going to be hard. You can do a separate venture if you want. A separate vertical if you want, which does that. But 99acres to morph into that is going to be hard.
Thanks. Thanks. That was very useful. Thanks a lot.
So next question is from Utkarsh Solapurwala from Dynamos Capital. So Utkarsh, you are there?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, go ahead and ask your question.
So can you explain our thought process on the Naukri Learning, the vertical you have launched recently, and are there any plans to monetize it?
No. So we are already monetizing, but it's, you know, early days. What we are trying to do is see if we can build a marketplace of online sort of courses, right? Now, for any marketplace to succeed, there have to be, to start with, you have to have a lot of online courses available for people to be able to sort of compare and choose and research, you know, them. Now, because the edtech market has, Naukri learning has been around for a while. It is just that the edtech space was not so hot, and therefore we were not focusing on it. But given that we are seeing a lot more activity in edtech, there are a lot of course providers now, right? There are many more online courses available than was the case earlier. We have sort of started investing a little more in this platform. So we've got a guy running the show. He's doing a very good job. We made a lot of progress over the last few months. But still, we have a long way to go. It's nowhere close to where we would want it to be. We are generating, our business model is lead generation for the edtech providers. We have a few large customers. We are doing a lot of business with them. But it's still, so we're monetizing, but it's still very, very tiny.
So we'll be able to use the job seekers data that we have to suggest them the necessary updates that they should do to their resume.
Yes, that's the idea. That's why we actually built it under the Naukri sort of umbrella, because we believe that, most of these edtech courses, which are there on Naukri Learning, will be used to upskill, job seekers. And we can use our Naukri data to recommend to them or to help them sort of understand which skills are in demand, what courses are in demand, and sort of guide them to take the right decisions over time.
Thank you, sir.
Next question is from Manoj Bajpayee from Barclays PMC. Manoj, go ahead and ask a question. Manoj, you are there? I'll take next question in the meanwhile. Next question is from Dheeresh Pathak from GSAM. Dheeresh, go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah. First, can you give the cash balance?
Sorry, you want to know the cash balance, Dheeresh?
Yes, cash balance.
Chintan, what, 3,500 crores?
3,500 crores, including,
including the cash balance with our subsidiaries.
Yeah.
Okay. And what I understood from some of the other questions that you answered, that when you raise the money during QIP, it was as if, you know, we had the impression, at least some of us had the impression, that the transactions would close quite soon. Given the confidence that you were showing at that time.
Actually, I thought I had clarified specifically that these things are lumpy, they're opportunistic. We have some ideas, but they will take time, could be 12, 18 months, anything, is what I remember clearly saying. I don't know. I want to clarify that right now, but look, these things take time.
It came with those conditions, like you're saying now, that these things take time, but it sort of, we came out with some sort of an impression that you will close, in the coming quarters, maybe not immediately. And now, as far as I understand correctly, I mean, you're still in that process, right? How would you characterize, the timelines from the time at the, QIP fundraise versus now? Has it moved forward? Is it still there? Is it backward? Like, how would you characterize it versus that time period?
So we've had some more conversations. We must have met at least another 10, 15 companies over the last few months in different spaces, right? And we've had a few conversations. There are some small deals which, could happen at any point in time. But the large ones, like Sanjeev said, are, lumpy and opportunistic. It takes time to cook a deal. And often it's a case of two steps forward, one step backward. So, these things are not easy to execute. We are still hopeful, but, you know, I won't say that. We can't give you a clear timeline right now.
Sure. And on 99 acres, so without being a broker, what are the other things that you can do, which can, you know, sort of, like you said, you know, you've cleaned up the listing, so spamming is less. So what are the other things that we can do to build more trust and, you know, provide consumers with some sort of a standardized processes, which brokers, you know, like developers can be more, you know, organized, but broking community is quite fragmented and everybody has their own set of things they do. And there is less trust among the buyers. So how can you, as a platform, create more standardization and more trust around that without being a broker yourself?
It's a good question. See, one, of course, see, what you have to understand is that the real estate market in India is very, very opaque. There is, unlike the stock market where prices are available every day, you know what sort of stock is worth, how much. I mean, in real estate, very hard to figure out what the prices are like, what the last transaction was like, you know, what is the going rate and so on and so forth, right? So now 99 acres sitting on a ton of data. We have asking prices for the last more than 10 or 12 years now. We've been in the market. We are increasingly getting better. And, you know, we've invested in a company called Teal, for example. Now Teal is doing a lot of real estate analytics. They're in the business of title checks and litigation checks and some of those things, right? So, you know, I think one sort of big area of work for us is how do we make the real estate market more transparent, you know, to both buyers and sellers. Sometimes owners are not able to sell because they ask for the moon. Even owners don't know what going prices are like. So just because they bought a property at a certain time for a certain price, they think they should get that price or they should get 50% more or 100% more. So, you know, so what happens as a result is there's a big gap between what buyers and sellers are willing to sort of accept, and therefore transactions take a very long time. So if we can make the market more transparent, if we can provide more information to people, if that information is credible, reliable, trustworthy, you know, the velocity of transactions in real estate can improve, right? And if that starts to happen, then that'll be a very big win for everybody. So that's an area which we would want to work on for the next, you know, couple of years and see what we can do on that front. We've already got a team working on a few things. Let's see if we can make progress on that front. In addition to this, you know, we can sort of work with, you know, our clients to help, you know, our sort of buyers, prospective buyers, identify, you know, which are the good dealers on our platform, which dealers are sort of good in a particular area or in a particular geography. So some of those things we can do to highlight, you know, the top dealers in a particular locality or in a particular geography, because so many of them, right? So there's a, you know, bunch of things we can do. You know, we have a few ideas. I can't discuss everything here. And we are working on some of them. We are, for example, we just launched reviews on 99 acres. Now, you know, there's a lot of information available on, again, you know, opaqueness, right? So now we're getting reviews on societies, you know, on localities. So sitting at home, at your home, you can sort of figure out what people are saying about different societies. You know, what is life like in, let's say, in Sector 150 Noida? What is life like in this particular block, in this particular area? So a lot of these kind of things we'll do, and we are working on already to sort of just make it a more engaging and a more attractive proposition for buyers, so that anybody who's looking for property, buying or selling property, should say, listen, let me start with 99 acres.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Hitesh. Thank you.
The next question is from Manoj. From Barclays PMS. Manoj, go ahead and ask a question.
Yeah. Hi, thanks for the opportunity. And Hitesh, my question was largely on a very broad level at the segment level or probably the sectors, because medtech and edtech, these are the two very sought after segments a lot of people are working upon, including you. Beyond this, what is your sense that a couple of more sectors or areas you guys are looking at very closely, which may become very big over next 3 to 5 years time frame? Secondly, the second part of question was, do you have any sort of cap to the number of investments you are going to make in next 6 months to 9 months? The reason I'm asking is about to check on the available management bandwidth to focus on the investment which you guys keep on doing. So I think currently you are at 23 or 24, I'm not sure. But is there any cap which you are looking at for year by year, or you don't have that kind of numbers in mind?
So you see, internally, we are focused on just four categories: recruitment, real estate, jobs, and matrimonials for the time being, right? And this is where, and education for the time being. And this is where we spend all the operating team. This is where we spend all our time. We are not looking at, new categories to enter as an operating business. From an investment standpoint, yes, we continue to look at all kinds of opportunities. And we are more bottoms up in our approach. So we look at what comes our way and then invest accordingly. But as an operating business, we are going to just focus on these four categories for the next at least 18 to 24 months, right? As far as, I can let Sanjeev can talk about what he's seeing in the investment sort of on the investment scene. But to answer your other question, how many companies we could invest in going forward, because we already have a lot on our plate. See, what we have done over time is we've separated out financial investing from strategic investments. So we have a separate team looking at our strategic investment portfolio where we have five or six companies only. And we have a separate team looking at our financial investment portfolio, which is now a large part of which is now under the AIF, right? So we have separated the two for acquisitions and strategic investments. It's the operating team which works with the strategic investment folks. And for the financial investment piece, it's Sanjeev and the AIF team which work together. And there, of course, we have 15, 17 companies. Maybe I'll let Sanjeev comment on that as well.
Yeah. I think it should summarize better how we organize this. The financial investments team is, 6 AIF, 7 people. I mean, it probably will not go beyond 10. The fund is $100 million. So you're talking about maybe 15, 20, 25 companies over the next 3 years.
Sanjeev, you want to talk about what you're seeing on the, what new opportunities?
We don't do it top down. We do it bottom up. So we don't sort of go in and say, hey, we've got to look at the sector now. We've got to do one company in this and one company in that. We don't give quotas and targets of that fashion. We simply say, what's bubbling through? Just meet everybody. So we meet dozens of startups every week, maybe 100 or so every month, maybe more than that even. Beyond that, we study others without meeting them. Maybe do phone calls. And right now, it's all Zoom calls anyway. So you do a few hundred to invest in one or two, right? And there's spaces we've liked, but if the company's not right, the founder's not right, or the valuation's not right, we don't do it. As simple as that. And there'll be spaces we'll miss, and we live with that. That's okay. But you want, we do it bottom up, like I said.
Thanks. I think that was quite helpful, Sanjeev and Hitesh, and all the best. Thanks very much.
That was the last question we had. Any other question, please?
There are some online questions, so Hitesh, just in case you want to take that.
Okay, let me just take a look at them.
There's a question of Vishaka Jain.
Two questions, basically.
Vishaka Jain actually has come onto the call. I may allow.
Okay, I'll take these questions. So, impact on billing due to COVID for Naukri mainly. Do you still enjoy 8x premium pricing to your competitors? Highlight on other ventures like Happily. So, we never charge 8x of our competition, but COVID has not impacted our leadership. In fact, if anything, our leadership has got strengthened during COVID because we've gained share over our competition. So, hopefully, that will translate into more pricing power also in times to come. Advertising on 99acres to generate revenue from Karan Jariwala. We are mostly focused on real estate advertising. We don't want to digress into sort of other areas. We've done that in the past in Naukri. It's never a substantial part of our, it was never became a substantial part of our business, and you need to invest in multiple other things to make it happen. So for the near future, we are going to be focused mostly on real estate advertising on 99acres.
On Happily and Married, I mean, like I said, it's back to what 70-80% of pre-COVID. Most of our companies bounced back nicely. Whether it's Zomato, Policy Bazaar, Shop Kirana, Gramophone, they're bouncing back nicely. Some have bounced back to pre-COVID, above pre-COVID levels. So it's doing all right. Now, Hitesh, there was a question on advertising in 99acres and stuff.
I took that. We are focused mostly on real estate ads. We're not looking to go outside real estate.
Yeah,
for ad revenue. we don't think it can be material in the short term.
So I guess we're done.
Vishakha has raised her hand again. Vishakha, you have any question? Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi guys. Sorry to interrupt. As Hitesh just mentioned that it is not 8 times. I don't remember, like in one of the earlier calls, I read that you enjoy premium to your competitor's price. So could you just highlight like what is the premium pricing you enjoy right now currently in Naukri specifically?
To be honest, we've not been, because see, we believe we have a close to 80-85% share of the market. We don't really face any competition when we go out and sell to our clients. So actually don't even know what competition pricing is like. I'm sorry right now.
Okay, thank you.
These are the questions. Vic, you can go ahead now.
Yeah, sure. Thanks everyone. On behalf of Info Edge India, we conclude this conference. Thank you, and you may disconnect your lines now.
Thank you, everyone. Have a great evening.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye, guys.